thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
My nickname is Gloom.
And inform you in the afternoon.
People who like licorice really like licorice.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
An agenda-free Friday, as you know, is brought to you by Neshoba Valley Ski Area in Westford. Why drive when you can ski, ride, or tube? So close to home. Visit SkiNeshoba.com. Again, thanks to our friends at the Neshoba Valley Ski Area for sponsoring Agenda Free Friday. We'll take your calls on anything and everything. We've had a lot on the table this week, as many of you know. Started out with the Celtics and the Cavs and the Celtics and the Clippers, the Bruins along the way. Still Patriots fallout. The Red Sox have opened spring training. We'll get to all of it here over the course of the next 4 hours. But Marshall Hook, as I said, is in. Murray's in. Which one of you two clowns wants to go first?
I'll go once I get... What does this animal do to this microphone? Is this like this every day that you come in here?
Pretty close, Murray.
Jesus.
Yeah, pretty close, Murray.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, I don't envy you there. Love Zoe, but my God. Just keep him away from the equipment. So I just want to make a quick comment on a Bruins-related tweet I saw on my way in. It's from this guy, Jim Matheson, at NHL by Maddie.
Yeah.
On Twitter. He's apparently covered the Edmonton Oilers since 1970. And his tweet, if you haven't seen it yet, reads as follows. I'm hearing New York Rangers would want Bruins rookie Jake DeBrusk included in any deal for Ryan McDonagh. Ironic, since former Oiler GM Glenn Sather traded for Jake's dad, Louis, when he sent Mark Messier to the Rangers in 91. That part's irrelevant. Jake DeBrusk included in any deal for Ryan McDonagh. How do you feel about that?
I told you, I would give up DeBrusk or Heinen, but not both, if you were going to make that kind of deal.
Well, I think you're crazy, because he is one name that I don't want involved for any deal for Ryan McDonagh. And I know they need a left defenseman. He's a kid he would have here for another year. It's an area of need, but I wouldn't do it. And if I'm Don Sweeney, I'm begging you, please don't do it. Don't include Jake DeBrusk for any deal for Ryan McDonagh if you're looking to make it. And if the Rangers call, hang right up on them if that's what the ask is. Because I think if you watch this Bruins team, outside of the obvious in Charlie McAvoy, DeBrusk is the only other rookie to me that I look at, and I think you should be excited to look at that kid and say, okay, you actually have a real building block here with Jake DeBrusk. He's fast, he forechecks, he's tough. He has a good shot, and basically, if you looked at him recently, he's been almost a point per game. DeBrusk is a no to me, so I don't move him for Ryan McDonagh. I beg the Bruins not to do it, and I'm a hard no, so that's all. I saw that tweet, and I got a little no, not Jake DeBrusk.
So Big Ten days coming up here for the Bruins. Obviously, the trade deadline is the 28th. Today's the 16th. You can do the math. But that Bruins are going to heat up next week. I think you're going to hear a lot of trade talk in the NHL starting next week, Murray. Marshall, what do you got?
There was a quote that Alex Speer had from Dave Dombrowski earlier in this week. Dombrowski was asked whether or not it was his plan to bring back the same team he had last year. And the quote is, "That wasn't per se our plan. This year's free agent market is much different. It's led us to where we're at now." And this drives
me. What's your problem there, Marshall?
Yeah, here's the problem. It is true that this free agent market is different this year, and everyone knows that. So by being non-specific and saying, well, the free agent market is different this year, that's why we didn't bring anyone in, ignores the fact that the way in which this free agent market is different is there's so many free agents still out there, and in theory, you could get them at discount prices. He's like, you know, like on Black Friday, he really has his heart set on like a 50-inch TV for $500, and he walks into Target. And not only he's hoping maybe he'll get one, they're like 60-inch TVs for $400. You and me, we get that. We walk out with two TVs. We're like, great, this is fantastic. We'll get one for the living room, one for the family room, one for the man cave, whatever. He walks out, he goes home to the kids and says, well, I got to tell you, this Black Friday market was really different, so I got no TVs. It makes no sense. It makes no sense that it's different. There's so many guys available, so we got none of them.
Murray, would you call that a little bit of a Colin Coward kind of take from Marshall?
Kind of, I like it, yeah.
It's a runabout way to get there, don't you think?
No, I like an analogy like that.
So just quickly, Marshall, you don't like Dombrowski, do you?
I was a big fan when they brought him in. I said, look what he did with the Tigers. He didn't win. Look what he did with the Marlins. But he really rebuilt those teams. When he went to the Tigers, they were nowhere. And he brought them back to the brink. So I was completely in favor, but what he does, no. At this point, I'm no fan at all. No fan at all. I don't get what his plan is. It's, we'll spend a lot of money this year on David Price, and then we won't do anything the next year, and then we'll do absolutely nothing this year. Nothing. And I know that somewhere out there, Nick Cattles is screaming, it's not opening day yet. I didn't know opening day was tomorrow. What are you criticizing him for? You know what? Spring training is now, though. And nobody new is there. It's great. We got, what's his name, back there at first base.
Mitch Moreland.
Yeah, we got Mitch Moreland back, and we got Eduardo Rodriguez back. So we're all set. We're good. Or whoever, Nunez. We got him back. So that's great. That is fantastic. You've added Moreland and Nunez, who you already had. That is your free agent take for this offseason.
So we'll get to Dombrowski. We'll get into Dombrowski a little bit more later on. I mean, I'm sure the callers will take us there, too. But you know why it doesn't feel like Dombrowski is a plan, Marshall? Because he doesn't.
There you go.
That's why. His plan is, let me go get the best available player in the area of need. That's what his plan is. There isn't much of one there. We'll get to the calls here in just a moment. Where I want to begin is with Hanley Ramirez. And this is going to take more than one segment. So we're just going to dip our toe in a little bit here in the first segment on Hanley. Did you guys hear any of this today? You know, Hanley showed up?
I haven't heard it. I saw on Twitter that, you know, he's now doing the TB12 method, essentially, or he's doing the bands rather than, you know, lifting weights and whatnot.
Pliability, I believe, is the word you're looking for, Murray, right? Yeah. So we'll get to Hanley specifically, but I do want to touch on first a comment by Alex Cora on Hanley Ramirez, or more specifically, a question from my my buddy Sean McAdam, who works for Boston Sports Journal with Bedard. I'm laughing already because I was listening to it saying, I can't believe this is the stuff that's being asked down there. This is McAdam talking to Alex Cora after Mookie Betts and Xander Bogart spoke yesterday. Okay, so here's McAdam. Go, Jimmy.
Given the comments made by Mookie and Xander yesterday about maybe some dysfunction or a leadership void after David was gone in the clubhouse, would you like Hanley to take a more active role in that regard this year?
He should.
He should? What? Hanley? Hanley's the guy they're going to rely on for leadership? Like, McAdam's asking Alex Cora, do you want Hanley to be the leader of this team, given what Mookie and Xander Bogart said? He can't be serious. Murray, do you want Hanley to have anything to do with leadership?
No. He said it going into last year, that Hanley at the time, right? He said something along the lines of, like, I'd like to, you know, be a more assertive and take my, you know, be more of a leader of this team. I'm paraphrasing, but I know he said something like this. And at the time when he said it last year, I was like, no, God, no, please. Just show up and try to hit.
Marshall, you? How about you? The idea that a year later, still a year later, that we are asking about Hanley Ramirez filling the void in leadership left by David Ortiz, to me, is borderline comical. And not even borderline. Like, I do listen to it and say, you've got to be kidding. Do you want Hanley to fill a leadership role?
I'm sure.
No!
If what you want your players to do is not care, yeah, sure. Then absolutely, not care. Don't try when you're not interested, which is at least half, if not more, than the time. Sure, that's the kind of leadership you want from that guy.
I want nothing to do with Hanley in a leadership role. Nothing to do with Hanley in a leadership role. And quickly, since this broke last night, after we left, the Red Sox have re-signed Eduardo Nunez. I don't even know if that's official yet, technically, but Eduardo Nunez is going to be back with the club. Now, Cora was asked a bunch of things about Nunez. First of all, just quickly, in 10 seconds, Murray, how do you feel about Nunez being back?
I'm happy about it, as long as that knee is okay.
Marshall?
I like him better than Brock Holt.
Okay, I'm for it, too. I think we all are. He's not going to solve the power problem. But you know what I like best about Nunez? His attitude. His attitude. Do you remember last year in Yankee Stadium when he bunted against CC Sabathia and the stink it caused with the Yankees? And do you remember what Nunez said after the game, Jimmy? Go.
You know, he's my game. I cannot change my game. We know he has back knee, but it's not my problem. I can change my game. I have to try bunting. We know how any guy have 30 homer, 100 RBI. So we play smart. We play the little game. And if he has issues with the bunting, he has to work it out. It's our game. We don't have any power. We have to work. We have to bunting. We have to hustling. It's our game.
So, again, hit on all the key points. We don't have power. This is my game, not my problem. And the way that Nunez played, isn't that what you want to see more of from Betts? From Bogarts?
Hey, he's a grinder. It was him and Devers in that last month and a half of the season that really were your offense.
So, Murray, I keep using the word edge. The Red Sox had no edge. The 2017 Red Sox played with no edge. The 2016 Red Sox effectively played with no edge. And you know what? It did change a little bit last year when Nunez came in. I'm not saying he will change the whole thing, but I'm telling you that Nunez, to me, gives him a little bit of energy and some fight.
Any power.
And some life, exactly. And some attitude. And it feels to me like, so for that reason, I don't even care about the bat, the legs, all of that. I like the attitude that Nunez is going to bring to the clubhouse.
We know he has a bad knee.
We'll go right to your phones here. We'll go right to the phones right away. Steve's in Medford. Steve, go.
Hey, Tony. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to run something by you on Mookie Betts. Now, did you see that Sports Illustrated came out with the top 100 baseball players list the other day?
I did not, but go ahead.
Yeah, Mookie's ranked sixth, and I wanted to see if you thought that was too high, too low. Just for reference, he's like ranked above Clayton Kershaw, Aaron Judge, and like Nolan Arenado. So just your thoughts on that.
Yes, it's too high. He's not the sixth best player in baseball. He's not. Now, look, I like Mookie, and again, I want to see him sort of take the next step in his development. I don't even mean as a player this year. I want to see Mookie turn into a leader, because I think Mookie's got it in him. I think Bradley's got a little of that in him, but Bradley's not a good enough player. Now, you want to tell me Mookie's one of the top, I don't know, 30 players in baseball? And I don't get caught up in lists like this because they're more subjective than not, but off the top of my head, I can rattle off five players in the game that are better than Mookie Betts or that I'd rather have than Mookie Betts. Now, you want to get into different discussions about all-encompassing talent, what have you, then fine, maybe he's on your list, he's not on mine. But I do think that he can be a hell of a lot better in the clubhouse and on the field than he was a year ago. Okay, we're off and running on an agenda-free Friday. When we come back, I want to go over more what Hanley said. Again, it's agenda-free, so we'll be all over the place. I already see a bunch of you lined up. I want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo, Bill Belichick, Celtics we'll get to, Chris Gasper will be with us a little bit later in the program. We'll get to all of it. But when we come back, Hanley is on a new program. New program. We'll explain that to you next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
I'll tell you what, just quickly, Marshall, thank God for Hanley. Like, does anyone on that team have a personality other than Hanley? Think about it. No, really, think about it.
It's been my complaint about this team for a while.
I mean, really?
Zero personality.
They have none. Zippo.
I wouldn't even consider him a personality.
No, he's got personality. He's
goofy.
Out of his mind.
Yeah,
okay.
He's kind of goofy.
But that qualifies.
Yeah.
Like, he's out of the ordinary. He's not vanilla, at the very least. I mean, when Hanley says something, whether you think he's out of his mind or not is immaterial, at least for our purposes today. But I do think that at least you sort of listen to him. I admit, when I heard that Hanley spoke today, I found myself saying, I want to hear what he has to say. Like, what's he talking about? What kind of nonsense is coming out of his mouth now? The rest of them, you don't even get that. Like,
everybody else is vanilla. At least there is some color with this guy, right?
So I wanted to hear Betts with the contract, but that turned into nothing. But other than that, Hanley's the only guy I want to hear from, really. He's the only one I think has any sort of real color and flavor to him and all of that. He's the only one with any personality whatsoever. But in the interim, we'll squeeze in a couple of calls first. Again, Michael is in a car and wants to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I've been watching Bill Belichick for a lot of years, and what I've seen lately doesn't add up. Well, first, the Garoppolo trade, he got a Shirelli in return that was terrible. The second, what it didn't even add up to me more than that was in the Wickersham story, the fluffy logic they used about he wanted to put him on his feet in San Francisco and do a favor to Shanahan's kid. None of that made sense to me. That wasn't Bill Belichick. But what is Bill Belichick is this.
So, Michael, just quickly, Michael, I don't think it was about doing a favor for Shanahan. I think it was about putting Garoppolo in a place where he could succeed. But go ahead.
Okay, my thought is this. He needed him to be with this best quarterback guru in the league, Shanahan, because he needed him to succeed. So he didn't have. So he looked good for Kraft. Basically, if he goes to Cleveland and sucks, guess what? Kraft looks right in the situation. Looks like he made the right move, and it emboldens Kraft to continue to take more power from Belichick. Putting him in a situation like that, it blows up in Kraft's face. It looks just like it looks right now. It looks like Kraft let Aaron Rodgers or Steve Young get away, and Belichick wins. I think that was his only goal with putting him there. That was by design. He put him exactly where he knew he would succeed.
Okay, so Murray, again, this comes back to...
If the quarterback's good, he's going to succeed anywhere, even if he goes to a hellhole like Cleveland.
Not necessarily, though. So at least, again, think of it in these terms, who the coach is. Would you say Garoppolo's going to be the same player whether he's with Bill Belichick in New England or Hugh Jackson in Cleveland?
No, he would be, he would have a better chance of succeeding under Belichick and in this system.
But the question that the
I mean we talked about this I think like last week when Felger was here. Like I think the coach sometimes is overrated with the success of quarterbacks in this league. Like Brady would have been successful somewhere else. Like they either have it or they don't. I think it's that simple. Now, the system and the coach, someone like Belichick, it certainly can help. I mean, if Brady was somewhere else, would he have five titles? Probably not, but I think he'd have a couple. So it certainly can help. But if Garoppolo is the real deal, like you believe that he is, and I think like Belichick believes that he is, I don't. Even if he went to Cleveland, he'd be successful.
So the question the caller raises is, does Belichick look better or worse if Garoppolo does well in San Francisco?
Oh, I think Belichick looks good if Garoppolo succeeds, no matter where he would be.
See, so to me,
I believe that he, you know, until something is in front of me that can prove otherwise, I'll always believe that he was forced to trade him.
I mean, Bill wanted him in a good environment. I think that to me, that is the ultimate takeaway. Belichick wanted Garoppolo in an environment where Garoppolo could succeed or was more likely to succeed. I mean, ultimately, you never know what's going to happen.
But he was negligent in what the return was.
Absolutely. No two ways about it, Murray. Absolutely right. Tender's in Providence. Go ahead, Tender.
Hey, guys. The most positive thing that I've seen so far for the Red Sox is we've got a new manager and some new coaches, and I do think that's going to make a difference because these young players got a bad taste in their mouth from last year, and they're going to learn from that. And I do have a comment about Hanley. Remember when Hanley was playing first base on a consistent basis, and we all thought that he wasn't going to be able to concentrate and that he might mess that up? He actually did very good over there. So I think if he's serious about this health work that he's doing, I think he may be focused this year. I'm looking forward to watching him play and hit.
Okay, so we'll get to Hanley in a second. But Marshall, you're a big baseball guy. The idea that the Red Sox went into this offseason and made no significant changes to their roster. Now, Nunez they brought back, and who knows, maybe Jeter Martinez will happen. But as to now, it's effectively the same team back. Okay, same team back. They've changed the manager and the coaching staff. Is that enough to change the ultimate result?
Not even remotely. In fact, given the way that the Yankees and Astros have improved themselves, inactivity is a step backwards. Just returning the same team is going to take you backwards because the competition around you has gotten better. So, yeah, you can bring the same team out there. You're not likely to win the division against the Yankees, who have improved dramatically. And even if you did make it into the playoffs as a wild card, you're now going up against an Astros team, probably, a Yankees team, probably, and an Indians team, maybe, all of whom are better than you. They were last year. They've done things to improve, and you haven't.
So someone sent me an interesting story today on ESPN about the truly elite, loaded teams in Major League Baseball. I think there were five of them. Okay, I don't have the story in front of me at the moment, but they were Houston, Cleveland, the Dodgers, the Yankees.
And the Astros.
Houston.
Okay.
Actually, it was six.
Cubs.
The Cubs and the Nationals.
Okay,
Cubs and the Nationals. The next group of teams was called good but short of elite.
Yeah.
Red Sox were number one in that group. And to me, that's exactly what they are. They're the second level. They are a B-plus kind of team, and until they get to that A level, they're not going to compete with those other clubs. Quickly, I'm sorry, you just sit for a second. Garrett in Dorchester. Garrett, what do you got?
Matt, you, I don't understand you sometimes. What is Cora supposed to say when asked that question by Hanley, McAdams? Are you supposed to say, oh, hell no, he's a loser, he's not a leader? What are you supposed to say?
Yeah, Garrett, honestly, I'm not really dumping on Cora. You're right. Cora's got nowhere to go with that question. I'm more poking fun at McAdam. Like, do we really want Hanley to assume any mantle of leadership?
I mean, this is his fourth year. He's one of the older guys in the clubhouse. So he has to assume that leadership role. I mean, what do you think, Dustin Pedroia is going to do that? He wants the hell out of here.
Garrett, let me tell you, Hanley doesn't want it either. Don't kid yourself. You think Hanley wants the leadership role? If Hanley's your leader, you're screwed. Okay, you're screwed. Now, look, again, I find him entertaining. I do. I find Hanley entertaining. I find him way more entertaining when he hits because I think that Hanley's the type of guy that if you pitch right, can still hit the ball out of the ballpark. And the Red Sox don't have enough of those kinds of guys. So if Hanley hits, he can change where the team goes. He's one of the few guys that can actually have a profound impact on the outcome of the team. Okay, now, I prefer to focus on the younger guys because I think at this stage of his career, we know what Hanley is. But since you brought him up, I do want to play a little bit of this sound from Hanley's session with the media. First of all, apparently he showed up 15 pounds lighter. looking leaner and lighter. If you remember, he had off-season shoulder surgery. Okay, I think he was putting that on Instagram and Twitter right at the end of the off-season. Remember that? So this is Hanley now, asked about his new physique and his new body, revealing that he has adhered to a new training regimen that just happens to be, or happened to be built by the quarterback of the New England Patriots. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I went on the Tom Brady side, you know. So I think he's 100%, you know, everything he said in the book and the work he does, is, it makes sense, a lot of sense.
You're following his book, and or did you visit Dallas?
I am. You know, I'm reading his book, and, you know, it's working for me.
Jimmy, can we stop there real quick? Okay, so he said he's read Brady's book. Why are you laughing, Marshall?
I don't see him reading a lot.
Yeah. No, I think someone might have sort of given him the...
He got it on CD.
Yeah, well...
Someone's given him the plan and broken it
down.
Yeah,
someone might have given him the parameters for it. Maybe he's read some of the book. Is there a Spanish version of the TB12 method? I don't know how good Hanley's reading is in English, and I'm not making fun of him for it. I'm just saying it is his second language. Like, you know, I'm reasonably functional in Italian, Murray, but if I have to read it, it's a different sort of thing. Okay? So, like, okay, he's following the TB12 method. Keep going, Jimmy.
You know, because what can work for me cannot work for you, so it's working for me.
Did you visit Alex Guerrero?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Have you lost weight?
I did.
How much?
Around 15.
Okay, so he has not met with Guerrero. He's on the TB12 method. He's lost about 15 pounds.
Have you seen the photos? He does look leaner.
No, I don't doubt it. I think that's good. He looked like a linebacker a couple of years ago, and he started to thin down even 2 years ago when they put him at first base, Murray, if you remember. He came in lighter that year. And Tender in Providence is right that it forced Hanley to pay attention. Okay, it forced him to pay attention and stay focused. And as it turned out, he had his best year with the Red Sox. He is in effectively a contract year. It looks like he's in decent shape. He appears to be motivated and focused, which brings us to the next cut. He was asked how often he thinks he can be at first base. If you remember, this was a point of contention last year. They couldn't get Hanley on the field to play first. He could DH only. Jimmy, go.
Hanley, in a perfect world, how many games would you see yourself playing at first this year?
Around 150, 158. Around the radar, so I can play, you know, at least 1 minute. So I have no problem with that.
So wait, now he wants to play first base?
150 to 158 games.
Around 150, 158.
What? Why the epiphany? I'm glad. No, so on the one hand, I'm glad he's had this epiphany that he wants to get in better shape and he wants to be leaner and not hit, what was it, like 242, whatever the hell it was last year?
Something like
that. Okay, so that part I can appreciate and I hope it works for him. But now he's also had this other epiphany in which he now wants to be on the field and play first base. What? Whereas last season, he was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I want nothing to do with that.
You know how many times Hanley Ramirez has played 158 games in a season? Either one of you want to guess, Jimmy? Anyone?
Is it once?
I was going to go with zero. Yeah.
Once. 12 years ago, when he was 22, he played in 158 games. If Hanley plays in 158 games, it'll be a freaking miracle. More importantly, you don't want him to play in 158 games. If he plays in 158 games, he's going to trigger the option on his contract, and he will be back for 2019. You want nothing to do with Hanley playing that number of games. Last one was the ability to hit for power. This team obviously has a shortage. Here's Hanley on providing power. Jimmy, this is Hanley number one.
Are you a guy who can provide some of that additional power?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And you're going to see it for sure, you know. Literally, I was hitting with one arm last year, so and I hit 23, you know. So now that I feel good, cannot be no excuses. Better go out there and hit more than 30.
One arm. He was hitting with one arm last year and he hit 23, barely 242.
I like the confidence.
Yeah, something tells me Hanley's delusional is sort of the problem. I think that...
He was banged up. He did have the shoulder surgery. I mean, that is factual. So if he was, you know, I think if he's saying he's hitting with one arm, if it hit 23, in theory, I mean, he's got the power to hit 30-plus.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he's always had that, Murray.
But you know how many players across all of Major League Baseball played in 158 games or more last year?
10.
14.
Okay, so again, I'm not holding my breath on Hanley. All I'm telling you is Hanley's problem's not his shoulder. Hanley's problem is not his weight.
No, it's his head.
Hanley's problem is his head.
It's between his shoulders.
It has always been his head, and so you're going to get lapses with Hanley. 2 years ago, when you look back at it, 2016, played in 147 games. His OPS was 866. He had 30 homers with 111 RBI. And in the second half of that year, he was a monster. He was a monster. He was a force. Hanley was. The irony is, look, get him out there for 125. Okay, get him out there for 125. Let him produce and keep those at-bats down enough so you don't have to give him that contract for 2019, because we all want to move on from Hanley. But I do enjoy hearing from him. I find him at least somewhat entertaining versus the rest of the guys on that team who, man, talk about a boring, just vanilla team. The Red Sox are boring and vanilla.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like Antetokounmpo. Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
There are going to be rule changes with respect to pace of play for the 2018 season. You'll know about those rule changes before we start playing spring training games. One way or the other, those changes are going to be as a result of an agreement with the MLBPA. We've made clear from the very, very beginning that our strong preference was to have an agreement with the players, and in fact, we have significantly altered our substantive positions based on input we've had from players.
So that is Commissioner, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, who met with reporters yesterday in Tampa, talking about pace of play changes coming to the game. And again, the union has resisted this sort of thing. I just think it's an important thing to touch on as far as the state of the game, and then we'll get back to your calls. The union has resisted the changes here. Manfred is saying we're going to tell you what the changes are in the pace of play by the time games start. Games start next week, Thursday, which means that over the weekend or at the beginning of the week, we're going to have details. My guess is we're going to have a pitch clock. We are certainly going to have reduced mound visits. I think that's another one. They're going to try to trim a lot of the fat out of the game. Finally, if you are a baseball fan, they're getting to this thing. It's taken them way too long to get here, but baseball had the longest games ever last year, I think it was, an average of 305 for a 9-inning game. And during that press conference yesterday, Manfred said something that I was not aware of fully until I heard it, and I went, you've got to be kidding me. Here it is.
We think that in the initial instance, our emphasis should be on downtime. Places in the game, mound visits, the time it takes players to get into the box, you know, inning breaks. People, you know, we sell 90 in a normal game, right? Just a regular locally broadcast game. We sell 90 seconds of inventory in an inning break, and our average inning break is 2 minutes and 26 seconds. There's lots of time there that can be picked up in terms of the length of the game.
Did you hear that? The average local broadcast of a baseball game, they sell 90 seconds of ads, 3:30s, okay, 3 commercials. But the break between innings is 2.5 minutes, which means every time there are 3 outs, they're wasting a minute. It doesn't sound like much, Murray.
No, it adds up.
I mean, think it, that alone, if you could be pretty much ready to go and call it, give them an extra 10 seconds. First of all, it should be a minute 30. You come back, guys in the box, pitcher's ready to throw. There you go. It takes them another minute to finish warm-up tosses, maybe do an on-screen sort of, you know, on-screen ad, a live ad in the course of the game, and then the guy gets in the box. They waste another minute there. You have 18 of those in a game, or really, you know, 16, okay, at a minimum, 16 or 17. That's 16 or 17 minutes you could chop off the game right there. I wasn't aware of this. I thought they sold the whole break between innings. They only sell 90 seconds, which means they're blowing a minute on their own. And some of this is the players who don't get their fat asses on and off the field in time and who, you know, can't get in the dugout, put their stuff down, get ready to hit. Here we go. It's all about keeping it moving. You could chop. So, again, to say 18 minutes there feels like a lot, but you should be able to chop 10, 12.
I'll take 15. Give me 15.
Okay. Either way, if that extra minute.
Give me 8.
Isn't being used to bring in more revenue when it's about player comfort, F off. Chop that minute off. Deal with it.
Oh, it
get
just
in the
feels,
box. Let's feel, go. Let's go. Hurry it up.
So now, and the other stuff, you add the other stuff in, and this is why some of these methods have worked in the Arizona Fall League and in the rookie leagues and things like this. And you're going to see some interesting things, I think, with relation to the All-Star game, which it feels like baseball is now going to start using as a laboratory and a test case. maybe starting, if there's an extra inning game in the All-Star game, you're going to see a runner on second base maybe to start the 10th inning.
Good.
They did this in the minor leagues last year. Okay? In some lower levels of the minors, they started extra innings with a man on second base. And it chopped 16 minutes off an extra inning game. 16. In other words, you know, a game with that rule in place took 16 minutes less than a game without it. Right? So they, because it increased the chances of scoring that much. It doesn't sound like much, but it is. It is. It just took baseball way too long to get here.
I mean, think about the NFL. When you come back from a commercial break, they're over center on the ball ready to snap it. You come back from a commercial break, they're playing within a few seconds. You come back from a commercial break on baseball, you get some graphic over the field with guys walking around and the pitcher throwing warm-up pitches. It doesn't come back to action. It
no,
just doesn't.
Right, because they're slow. Get your fat ass off the field, get in the dugout, and you get out there and warm up. Let's go. We got to move. We got to move. And if the players don't like it, tough. So I'm hoping that Manfred will unilaterally impose some of these changes, including a 20-second pitch clock with no men on base. You know, there's going to be a walk-up time emphasized again about getting your ass out of the on-deck circle and into the box in a requisite amount of time. Hopefully they're serious about it. I'll believe it when I see it, though. Back to your calls. Mike's in Marblehead. Mike, what do you got?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Tony and Jim, I listen to you all the time. I think you do a really excellent job. I know you're probably trying to put this issue to bed, but just on Bill Belichick, I mean, I always looked at him as, like, you know, hooded Yoda, could do no wrong, but I 100% look at Bill differently now. I think he has squandered the goodwill of Patriots fans. I mean, when you look at the two Bills documentary, that one part that stuck out to me was when he was, like, emotional in the halls of Giant Stadium, thinking of, you know, the interminable hours of tape that he's watched. And I think, bar none, he's the hardest working coach in the NFL, and it's an absolute gift that we have him in New England.
But
I mean, that comes from his military background, and I think that that's where the problem lies. I mean, he's too military to the point where it clouds his judgment. Like, if you step out of line, you're just getting thrown in the brig. And for him to pull that move on Butler on the biggest stage of the season is just unconscionable. And, I mean, I know I've heard you guys be like, oh, like, when you talk about his legacy, that, you know, it's when people say it's tarnished, and then there's a lot of, like, pushback against that. But I think there's a pretty fitting analogy with chefs.
So, Mike, we're not going to get into any crazy analogies. Thank you for the call. But, Murray, ultimately, what is your level of confidence in Belichick right now?
Well, if it's on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, I mean, it's like now a 9. It dropped a little bit because of the benching of Malcolm Butler, but he's still far and away the best coach in the NFL.
So, Marshall, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since the Super Bowl, and I'm not even sure if you've been on the air here since the Super Bowl.
Only on weekends when nobody cares.
Okay, so what was your assessment of the whole Belichick thing and the Malcolm Butler decision, and where is your level of confidence in Belichick right now?
I have no problem with Belichick. I am certainly bothered by the fact that we don't know what happened, but perhaps over just the whatever it's been 17 years of what he's done here, I trust that Malcolm Butler did something that warranted that benching, because I don't believe
for the whole game.
Yeah. I don't believe that Belichick would do that and, you know, risk losing the players that he still had if there wasn't a reason, because he effectively gave away the Super Bowl. I'm one of those guys who believes if Malcolm Butler plays, they win.
Yeah.
So he gave it away. He's not going to do that, I think, unless there is a defendable reason for that. Why he won't tell us about it, who knows? Because that's Bill Belichick.
I'm still hoping we find out. I think there are people digging on it, and I don't know that they're going to get what we all want, which is a clearer picture of what exactly happened.
Oh, I tend to agree with the caller, though, that he felt like, you know, the hierarchy was out of whack because of what's happened with the quarterback and how big he's got in the last 33 years, and whatever Malcolm Butler did, he felt like, you know what? I've already had to deal with this with the quarterback. Fine, I've had to swallow that. But you, you're a cog. I made you 3 years ago in this game. Your ass is sitting down. I'm the one in charge.
If this is an ego trip, though, even Bill Belichick will lose that locker room, won't he? If this is just about Bill Belichick's ego, handing away a Super Bowl for his ego, how does he come back next year and have the support of that room?
We'll see. That's why I think an apology is necessary, or at least an explanation to the players that matter, Brady, Dante Hightower, guys like that, the veterans. He owes them some kind of an explanation.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every Friday, late in the program, final word, we typically play the Fuppets when Hardy of the Midday Show, the marvelously talented Hardy, has the time and material to do the Fuppets. He does them on Friday, and we've gotten into the habit now of playing it actually twice during the show, Murray, as you know. So we're going to play it here in just a minute, but any ideas as what this week's Fuppets is?
Yeah, I already know. Jimmy sent it to me last night, so I already know what it is.
Oh, Marsha, you didn't listen to the show every day this week, did you?
I did not, no.
If I had, I remember losing my mind about something earlier in the week, but I don't remember what it was.
All I know is Jimmy makes his Fuppets debut.
Oh, Jimmy, you do? Do you have a Jimmy, you got a theory on what it is?
I know what it is, but I am in it for the first time.
You are?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. Then I'm very well. We'll sync it up with the simulcast, obviously, on NBC Sports Boston. I think Vinny's producing today. Is that right? Vinny Crouch, our producer, will sync it up. So if you're watching in the simulcast, it'll be on social media also today, this afternoon, if it isn't already. But here's this week's installment of The Fuppets.
By the standards of the way the Celtics have done this, like, if Dennis Johnson and, you know, the Celtics have gone way too far with this thing. Like, you gotta be kidding me. It cheapens the whole thing. For me, you'd have five names up there, maybe six. Russell, Bird, Cousy, Havlicek, Tommy, and then Red.
Pierce should be up there, though.
Yeah, Pierce, absolutely.
I mean, what's there. He? Is he like the second or third?
Second all-time in points.
He won one ring, and Garnett had to win it for him.
Okay, so he's a notch below, but he's still up there.
Not in my Raptors.
Well, congratulations. He's in mine.
If you start doing what you guys want...
What do you mean you guys want? One team, we threw in like two or three more names.
Pierce is 23rd all-time on the basketball equivalent of war.
Neat.
How are you getting more skilled with the hand movements of the
definitely puppets, yeah, well. So what was there was not actually a puppet of Jimmy Stewart, our producer, so what was that, an alligator?
I mean, it was just a little dragon or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can see how you would be portrayed as a fire breathing dragon, Jimmy. You have your moments where you can be hostile.
No,
very hostile. Yesterday in particular, boy, did you have a fire up your cavity. Let's go back to the phones. Ryan's in Ludlow. Ryan, what do you got?
Good today. Imagine that.
Hi. I'm just saying, like, I watch you guys every day. I really enjoy it, by the way.
Hey, what do you got, Ryan?
I'm just wanting to talk about the Patriots. Unfortunately, they lost in the Super Bowl, but I am very shocked about the Josh McDaniels thing. He was supposed to be at the Colts. Then one day he changed his mind, and he's at the Patriots again. And I feel like, in my opinion, what he was saying, what Robert Kraft was probably talking to him about after Super Bowl, when Belichick leaves, I'm nervous.
All right, Ryan, it's all right. I'm going to let you go. But most fans, I think, are happy that McDaniels is staying. Is there any question to you that he's the next guy now, Murray? Aren't we all at that point where we believe that McDaniels is the next guy?
I mean, it feels that way, but without that insurance, I mean, any report you read about this is that he was never given any kind of, you know, actual, it wasn't actually worded, hey, you're going to be the next head coach whenever Bill decides to leave. It feels like more of a wink wink nudge nudge kind of thing, but I don't think it's a guarantee, and I don't know how good I really feel about it. I like him as the OC, but as a head coach, I'm sorry, I still remember how bad it was in the year and a half he was in Denver and some of the moves he made there, and I don't know. Like, I just don't know if he's built to be a head coach in this league.
Yeah, that's because you have your own brain, Murray, and you actually use it. You don't just fall into line and say, well, just because he worked under Belichick, that it's going to be a continuation of what happened here with Bill. You're capable of looking at it independently and making that judgment. There's no way to know what the hell will happen. We'll know a hell of a lot more on Belichick in a year. Because I think this is it. And again, I'm going with my gut like a lot of people, but to me, it feels like this is it. Let's squeeze in one more call quickly, and then we'll do a giveaway. Pete's in Delaware. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys. Hey, Tony, question for you. With the Red Sox putting out a statement that they want to curtail Chris Sale's innings, which is great and all, but my concern is, I don't know what you think about it, but with Price coming off a torn elbow And I know he just pitched in relief and he was great, but that's not pitching six, seven innings each start. Don't you think they're going to have to do the same with him, too? We're going to have two of our top starters kind of being monitored?
So, Pete, it's a good point. And my honestly, I'd prefer that they do it that way. Now, if you look at prices month by month, and I'll double check because I haven't looked at it recently, but my recollection is that Price is the opposite of Sale. He starts on the slower side and finishes strong, at least through September. October has been a different animal, but I don't think that that's a physical question with Price. I think that that's a mental question with Price. That's about his poise and his balls, frankly, in the month of October. I just don't think that he has the makeup or hasn't had the makeup to pitch well. It overwhelms him. He gets nervous. But historically, he has struggled at the beginning. It takes him, a month or so to sort. And I say struggled. I think his ERA is still under 4 in the month of April, but it takes him a second to sort of find his rhythm, find his legs, and then he's usually good. That said, why are you laughing, Jimmy? What did I just say? Oh.
Now, if you look behind you, he's got the two screenshot of Jimmy Stewart and his puppet.
Oh, so there you go. Jimmy is the dragon puppet, the fire-breathing dragon that is Jimmy Stewart. But, some teams have talked about going to a six-man rotation. I don't know if the Red Sox have the depth necessarily in terms of 7, 8, 9 starters in the minor leagues to pull that off. But given the concerns they would have over Price for what the caller said, and then Sale, the workload, and Sale was actually asked about this the other day, the idea of a six-man, and wouldn't touch it. He wants nothing to do with it. He wants the ball every 5 days.
Well, couldn't they do it if, depending on what ends up working out here with Steven Wright?
Sure. But then the question then becomes, what happens if you have an injury and you want to stay with the six-man?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right? So, no, you could just switch to a five-man at that point. I think everyone would be fine. I don't think the Red Sox are going to do it.
If only there were some free agent pitchers.
But when you have a $210 million payroll, you should have a deep enough bullpen that you can have three innings in the month of April. Okay? Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be that big a deal.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.